welcome to episode 14 of Intrepid Photography Radio, where we peek behind the lens at who is doing what in the world of photography. I am your host, Bill Ramsey of the Intrepid Now Network. Before we get into today's conversation, let me make you aware of something really fun on the horizon. For those of you who have not perused the Intrepid Now webpage, shame on you, but you may not know that we have shows not only in photography, but in healthcare, lifestyle, business, and a lot more. Our business show will soon have a segment that will be a source of laughs, several awkward silences, and a good splash of chagrin. And let's just be honest, everybody needs a little more chagrin in their life. We who have or who do work in the business world have been mercilessly drilled with this battle cry, and it makes me sick. I'm sick of it, but it's know your elevator pitch. And the idea is this, for you who are not familiar with the elevator pitch, if you got onto an elevator with someone of influence, can you pitch who you are, what you do, what makes you especially valuable by the time you reach the top floor? You have approximately 60 seconds to say it. Listen, I've been to oodles of networking events, and incidentally, thanks to many of these disasters, they have inspired my presentation, How to Network Like an Introvert. But aside from that, at these networking events, I have heard more pitches than I ever wanted to, and most of them are vague, they're way too contrived, or a lot of them just flat don't make sense. The worst thing, though, is some of them go on for like 15 minutes. Ugh. Anyway, can you, person listening right now, explain clearly, succinctly what you do or what makes you unique in your particular business? As much as I do hate that battle cry for the elevator pitches, it really is a great exercise to winnow down your message to its core, to say it cleanly, succinctly. So, how would you know if your pitch makes sense? Because it always makes sense to you, right? But maybe not others. Well, now you have the opportunity to find out. Thanks to this new feature on Intrepid Now Business, you'll know exactly how people do. Adults will have exactly 120 seconds to face the intrepid kid, an inquisitive 11-year-old. He can ask anything he wants, and when the timer goes off, he will then explain back to the audience what he understands. Then you will know if your pitch makes any sense. The intrepid kid happens to be my middle child, the big H, so the segment is aptly titled Face the H. Look for it very soon. Incidentally, his first interview slash victim was The Last Man Standing on The Apprentice Season 3. A nimble, brilliant entrepreneur. How did he do when he faced the H? He gave himself a C. But enough of that. Today's guest on Intrepid Photography Radio has struck serious footprints, both in the worlds of film and digital photography. And he's still going strong. In the commercial world, his clients have included Walt Disney World, Blockbuster Video, Ilford Photo, Burger King, and Mamiya Camera. I miss my Mamiya 645. It's been a long time. I haven't thought about that in a spell. One of his prints is now property of the Smithsonian Museum, and another print lives in the Ansel Adams private collection. Oh, did I mention to you that he used to print for Ansel Adams? Yeah. Our guest has earned 8, count them, yes, I said 8 Ocho Kodak Gallery Awards and 2 Fuji Masterpiece Awards. His list of accolades goes on, but I don't want to run out of internet. So, without further ado, hailing from Des Moines, Iowa, it is my pleasure to introduce Mr. Woody Walters. Woody, thank you for joining us.
Bill, thank you. It's an honor to be here.
Well, again, we appreciate that you've carved out this time for us, and I'm really excited to get into it, so I've run my mouth long enough. It's time to hear something interesting, and that's from you. So, start here. How did you get into photography?
That's a funny story. I was really into karate when I was young, and my dad was a photographer in a past life. He unfortunately went bankrupt, didn't it? But he had movie cameras and cameras around, and so I borrowed one of his movie cameras and started doing little Bruce Lee films with the kids in the neighborhood, silent films. And that led me to stills, and so I started shooting with, of course, a 35mm. And then I went into a gallery, and they had an Ansel Adams showing there. And when I walked in, I saw his black and white prints there. I knew from that moment on what I would be doing for the rest of my life. And I stopped, and I was looking at the Half Dome print. And I was just like, no matter what, this is what I want to achieve in my photography, this type of quality, this type of excellence. And so I just ate, drank, breathed photography, tried to learn everything I could about it. And the next thing I knew, I was going to college for it. And, you know, I was shooting large format. I learned the zone system, which is really probably the biggest key to my personal visualization or the way that I approach my photography. And that really escalated me to new grounds and new territory for me to project what I was seeing in my mind's eye into the image. And so that's basically how I got into it. And from there, it's just been growing and growing and growing ever since.
Well, I'm glad that you brought up the zone system. I'm warning you that I'm going to come back to that concept when we look at one of your black and white photos. There are some in our audience who are not familiar with that. And so when we dive into a couple of your black and whites, I want to make sure I remember to have you explain that and show us on the actual image what you're talking about when you think of the zone system. But anyway, you have a print in the Ansel Adams private collection. Explain this. How did meeting and printing for him affect your photography?
He was so instrumental in my photography. And the reason why is the way he saw. He even told me, and this is a big one, I use this in almost all my classes. I was like, it's the background that either makes or breaks the subject. Anything can be a subject. It's how the relationship of the figure, what I call the subject, the figure and ground react to each other that really makes a performance of an image. And, you know, the zone system is nothing but a different language to talk about tonal values. So if I say zone 3, you know I'm talking about my last black with detail. If I say zone 8, you're talking about the last white of detail, and it ranges from 0 or 1 through 10. And so it's just 1 being the blackest, 10 being the whitest white or the paper white. And then if I say, okay, I want zone 3, you know that I'm talking about the last black with detail, and so you can see texture in those blacks. If I say zone 6, that's a really good zone for highlight on Caucasian faces, or any face for that matter. It doesn't matter. But it's on Photoshop, it's about 230, maximum 234 on your info. But it's a really good density for a highlight values. And so by seeing, you know, in working in black and white, you don't have color working for you. So that takes a lot out of it. I used to say black and white is 4 times harder to pull off than color, because without the color and the mood of colors that influences the viewer, it's a much more bigger obstacle to come over. In black and white, you only have shape and form and then tonal values. And how you relate to those tonal values will really affect the viewer's, you know, response to what's before them. And so, yeah, Ansel taught me how to see in backgrounds and then making backgrounds interrelate with the subject matter. And that act alone is one of the key secrets, I believe, in making a performance of an image. It's kind of like, you know, a guitar player will set a sheet of music in front of me. And I played guitar for more years than I've been a photographer, and I can play, you know, a fairly good guitar. But you take that same piece of paper and put it in front of Jimi Hendrix, and Jimi Hendrix is going to, you know, add his own little twist to it. And it's the performance that Hendrix is going to give you versus the performance that I'm going to give you. It's going to be night and day, because he's more than just a musician, he's an artist. And that's what I think the key is. And that's what Ansel gave to me. He gave me the ability to see my subject, respond to what I'm seeing, how I'm feeling, and then react to that and create my images or the performance of the image in order for me to share that with my viewer. Does that make sense? That was a long explanation
there. No, that's great. That's great. Incidentally, you mentioned Hendrix. There's a great interview of him. I wish I could remember who he's with, and you can find it on YouTube. But the interviewer was talking to him about his greatness, and he confessed. He said, the fact is, I've made so many more mistakes than most people. And he would attribute that to his sense of accomplishment.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's so true.
So let's camp on this, your relationship to Ansel, for just another moment, if you don't mind. Printing his images and working with him, your relationship to him, you mentioned, you know, the relationship to the background. What else was so profoundly different about what he was doing, even among other really, really great photographers? What would you, when you think about him, how he pursued his craft, how he executed it, what are some of the other things that were so different about him?
You know, Ansel, his knowledge in photography, and it should be this way with every photographer, especially now, even more so in digital, and unfortunately it's not. But Ansel was so precise in knowing his craft. And by knowing his craft, he was able to, you know, force the image to see what he was seeing in his mind's eye. And that's a really big thing. Now, I didn't get to spend, I only spent 3 days printing for Ansel. And so it was just a very brief period. But his expertise and his what he demanded from his prints, you know, he would make many, many prints until he got it just right. Just the tonal values just right. Burning here, dodging here, you know, exposing for certain values. And his vision was very concise and very straightforward in many ways. I mean, you take someone like Brett Weston or Ed Weston, they were much more out there in their creativeness and their visionary. But Ansel was so straightforward with his photography, and yet it was such an abstract, because black and white is an abstract art. But his vision was just so crystal clear in what he saw and how he felt. When you look at his images, you can just see that, you know, it's just so concise, it's so precision made. And that's the thing that I think really made Ansel Ansel. And he was able to share not only the beauty that was before the lens, but he was able to share his feelings of what was before the lens. And, you know, that's what takes a lifetime to learn how to do.
Well, let's talk about a black and white image here. You've been kind enough to share some of your work here with the audience. And at the bottom of this post, there's a slideshow of your images. One of the black and whites that you created There's an older woman sitting in a rocking chair. In front of it appears to be a barn. Would you tell us the story behind this photo?
This is a photo. I took this my first year in college, and it's shot with 4x5. And I remember pulling up on this. I would just go out and drive and start looking for images. And I was out riding, and I saw this old, decrepit barn. And so I was like, wow, there's got to be, you know, something rustic there that will make a great image. And so I was pulled up to the property. I got out of my car, got my camera, and was walking around. I heard this yelling and kind of mad anger voice yelling at these cows. And I was like, what's going on? So I walked around where the cows were. And here's this woman, and her name was Lillian. And I called her Edna for this image. But her name was really Lillian, but the image is called Edna. And there's Lillian throwing corn cobs at the cows using every four-letter word in the book, just screaming at these cows. And, you know, this is the back in the old days. I mean, this woman farmed land when it wasn't just one item that you farmed. She did cows. She did corn. She did beans. She did pigs. And she was dressed the way she was dressed. And I just saw her and I introduced myself and I was like, may I please take an image of you? And I photographed her many times, so we became pretty close friends, but this is one of the first images that I did. And I'm so glad you picked out this image to talk about, because when I met Ansel Adams, I sent him a print to thank him on how his work had influenced me. And I sent him the image, and he wrote me back, and I was in Iowa. My parents lived in Florida. I think they heard me scream when I got the letter from Ansel Adams back in Florida. And he told me that the image was very, very good, and he really liked it, and tell me more about myself. And so I wrote him and told him I'd love to meet him. And so I flew out there to meet him. And this is the first image that when he looked at my portfolio, which, boy, you want to be humble. Let Ansel Adams look at your portfolio.
No, thank you.
But he was pulled that image aside, and he was like, this is the image that the background is making the subject. And if you really look at it, yes, the old woman is most definitely the subject. But what's making this image is all the tonal values and the old decrepit barn behind her. And then even the little teapot sitting out there beside her and the rocking chair. It's just everything came together on that. And this was probably my first image that really opened my eyes to what composition and telling a story within an image is. You know, you advance that to the digital world where, you know, I've made images that have thousands of images, but it's still all a part of telling that story, getting the viewer to respond to what you're seeing and hopefully to share in a brief second, you know, that magic that happens between the creator and the viewer, a piece of yourself. And although, you know, Ansel used to say, you know, you don't know me just because you see my images. We've only shared a brief second. And yeah, that is so true. And yes, I understand what he's saying. It's so brief, but in a way you do get to know him. I mean, again, probably Ansel Adams, Jimi Hendrix are my two biggest influences in my life outside of Christ that really have shaped me as an artist. You know, Hendrix added so much more color to his songs, to his music, to the little rhythm lead notes he would play in between chords. Everybody thinks he's such a great lead player, and he was, but he was even more a phenomenal guitarist intermixing lead with rhythms between his song. It just set him so apart in his own style. And I think that's the key to any artist, you know. Yes, first I copied Ansel. I wanted to copy him to a T to learn how to create. And that's what you got to do. And I mostly teach now. And, you know, a lot of people that I teach, yeah, their images first start out looking a lot like something I would have done. But hopefully they're going to take that information and get to that point where they're going to be able to embrace it in their own heart into what they want to do. And that's when they create their own style. And that's what makes an artist is being able to come up with your own style and be able to share that with as many people as you can.
Woody, you've made a name for yourself in both the black and white and in the digital world. Talk to us about how you've adapted to this digital growth in photography.
You know, wow, I'm so lucky because I've rode the coattails of the analog world, you know, and I'm riding the new wave of the digital world. And I was fortunate because I was one of the first ones doing the digital world. And I remember when I first saw Photoshop, and this was like Photoshop 1 or maybe 2 when it first came out. But the person took a torn photograph and cloned it back together. And I looked at him and I was like, do you realize the creative possibility to this? And that really opened my eyes because, yes, I've studied a lot of photographers, but there was a point in my life where I deviated from studying photographers and started studying illustrators, people like Salvador Dali. Gosh, there's hundreds of them. Salvador Dali, H.R. Giger, Bob Peake. I studied the old masters, Raphael, Michelangelo. Just Rembrandt, I mean, it goes on and on. And by studying them, like Rembrandt was the true master of the zone system. He was probably one of the first artists that really conquered accomplishment of knowing what to do with tonal values into an image. And I would really study that. And then when digital came out, it was like no longer were you only photographing the beauty that was before the lens. Now you're able to photograph anything that your mind could conjure up. And back then they didn't have layers or anything in Photoshop. But I started a portfolio called Reflections of Christ. And one of the first images I did was an image of Christ's back after he's been whipped. And then I did all these images of like Mother Mary holding the baby Christ, the three kings looking down on Christ healing the blind. And I just started putting all these elements around this one image of his back and the scars that were, you know, from the whips on him. And that really just opened the floodgates for me to be able to create whatever I could think of in my head. And so now with the digital world being what it is, and there's quite a bit of learning curve, and there's both a negative and a positive to this. The positive is now we can create whatever we can think, and we're only limited by our own knowledge of our own craft on how to produce what we are trying to visualize within, you know, our own head. The bad thing is, and I said this 25 years ago, you know, with the onslaught of digital, wait until you see how much photography in the vision world will change on people being able to create these fantastic images that normally wouldn't be able to be created with a straight camera and a lens. And so, you know, we've grown so much and we're only, again, limited by our own knowledge of our craft and what we are seeing and how we're responding to it. The sad part about digital is now everybody thinks that they can have a digital phone or a digital camera and they're going to be good enough. And that's not the point here. Good enough is not what we're aiming for. We want to create masterpieces and be able to share those masterpieces by our knowledge of our craft and be able to, you know, convey that to the audience.
I find it interesting, the theme I keep hearing from you regarding your time with Ansel and your time now in the digital world is knowledge of the craft. And it is that knowledge of the craft that actually enables you to present and to actually create what you have in your mind, be it with a piece of film or be it with a digital image on Photoshop. I find that interesting. So, Woody, I'm looking at some of your digital composites here, and I'll be honest with you, they look remarkably complex to me. Like, for example, I'm looking at one that you've shared with us. It looks like a motocross kid. Can you give the audience an idea of what's going through your mind when you're creating this and maybe a rudimentary glance at how you're doing this?
Certainly. You know, Bryce, he's the senior. And in my portrait studio, when I had it then, people came to me to get illustrations done. And that's one of the things I offered. When Nina and I decided to open up our portrait studio, she was like, what can we do that would be different? I was like, well, why don't we do what I'm doing with the Christ portfolio, you know, doing all these montages of images. But let's find out what the senior's all about. Let's take their passion and create a one-of-a-kind illustration, a one-of-a-kind background that would really show their love about what they're passionate about. And in this case, it was this kid riding a motorcycle. And so I always have a consultation in my studio before I photograph anybody because I got to find out, A, if we're going to work together, but I got to find out what they love, you know, what they are passionate about. And so he told me he rides motorcycles and I was like, well, how good are you? And he's like, I'm not bad. And so I said, okay. And so, you know, we set up the shoot and I took the main element, which is him in the helmet. And that I photographed in the studio. And so then we went to this motocross lane. And I was like, all right, kid, show me what you got. And this kid was literally jumping 25, 30 feet up in the air with his bike. And I mean, within 30 seconds, I'm laying down on the ground, letting this kid jump over. This is how much confidence I had in him. And I mean, he was this good. And he was just a hot dog. And he just hit these hills and just jump. And I'm laying down, letting him jump over me. And we're doing all these, you know, curves where the sand's kicking up with the motorcycle and all. And so I really, again, pride myself on creating a background. This is one of the keys to montaging, is you got to have a background that's going to enable you to tie all these separate elements together so it is readable. And I use that word a lot when I create in digital. An image has got to be readable. You're telling a story here. It's like you're almost a magician. You're conjuring up all these elements to make this little potion that's going to show the world what this kid is really all about. And so I did the goggles and then I did these white lines coming in so I could make the bike curve into these white lines. And yeah, I mean, it takes quite a bit of time of doing it. And that's something that, you know, whenever I'm very fortunate because I've studied so much art and studied so many illustrators that when I get a concept, I can come up with images very, very quickly. And I get the feel of what I want to do. Yes, I knew it was going to be a horizontal image. Yes, I knew I was going to play off his helmet. Yes, I knew, you know, we were going to have a primary element. We were going to have a secondary, a third, a fourth, a fifth. And so I start adding all this to tell the story. And then, you know, the first thing I do is create the background. And then I start placing in the elements. And the main thing is to, you know, resize the elements so you have order of importance. And it really, again, allows the viewer to read into the image. And it's really great because it made me a very good livelihood because no one else was doing anything like this for senior images, you know, and now that's not the case. And it's been, you know, 25 years now since when I first started to where we're at today, but we're still so unique. And it's so great to be teaching now because now I shoot whatever I want, when I want, how I want, and come up with new techniques. I try to reinvent myself every year, you know, to grow. And I think everybody needs to do that. And so it's just the combination of it all. And then when the clients come in to see the images, the first image that comes up, we do a slide pro show. And the first image comes up is that background image, you know, and then all of a sudden the main element comes up of him in the helmet. And then all these little images of him riding his motorcycle. And by the time the image is finally put together, they are so just knocked out, you know, that money is no longer a price. They're going to pay you whatever you want to get paid because you have created one of a kind piece of artwork of their son. And he's going to take it to his grave. His parents are going to take it, you know, to their grave. They're probably going to order two large prints so he can have it when he moves out and they can have it in their home. And you think about that. You know, there's, again, I play guitar and I'm teaching my 12-year-old son how to play guitar. But there's nothing I would love more, nothing more I would treasure more than an image of my son and I playing guitar together. You know, my wallet's not going to matter there. And that's the whole key of why I created that specific images. And so we started doing 40 seniors a year because I knew I was going to be doing 40 illustrations. And I don't want to shoot 9,000 seniors. I want to shoot as little as possible and create the most I can and have that be my income. I want to create art. And so this was my way of being able to create my own style in doing portrait photography.
I find that especially interesting, Woody, that as you talk about, I want to create art, you're speaking very much in context of, I'm creating art that is making me a good livelihood. I find that interesting because so many photographers, I think, see that as a dichotomy or even an antagonistic relationship that, oh, it's, I'm doing art for art's sake. And here I hear you saying, yeah, I'm doing art for art's sake that feeds my family and takes care of us too.
Absolutely. So, absolutely.
Just out of curiosity, looking at this image, roughly how much time have you invested in this? After the capture, you've photographed everything, you have the images. When you now sit down, can you give me a ballpark? I've never dabbled or even touched or even thought about creating something like that. How long is that going to take you?
Bill, when I first started out, it took some serious time because, you know, everything was done from scratch. My wife always yells at me, you know, why don't you make templates so you can just boom, 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 put these elements in? Well, for me, it doesn't work that way. I want to create one of a kind. And when I first started out, I probably would spend 4 hours just creating the background, maybe up to 8 hours if it was really complex. By the time I get everything into it, I probably have 2 or 3 days into it. Now, people are going to say with the content that you just used, you know, Woody, how can I spend 2 or 3 days on an image? And I understand that there's wham, bam, thank you, ma'am. You know, you got it. There's photographers that do what I call cattle runs. You know, it's boom, 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 boom. Get them in, get them out, you know, sell the $10. And that's great. Those people, I tip my hat to you. I can't do that. There's no way I could shoot, you know, 2,000 seniors a year. There's just, that's not me. That's not how I work. But a lot of people would say, yeah, I can't spend that amount of time. And my response back then used to be, you can't afford not to spend that kind of time. Because again, with the digital world, you have to be able to create what they cannot. And, you know, this year you spoke about the Texas school and California school, Florida school, Atlanta school, Alabama, Mississippi. I'm teaching at all these different places. And the whole theme that I'm running this year is exactly that, create what they cannot. And so since then, I've developed styles and I've developed a very unique brush set that now I can knock out an illustration probably in about, well, down to 8 minutes if I'm using like my powder brushes and my smoke brushes and my paint brushes. And I think there's, you said that, mentioned the baseball player that was there. Those are the powder brushes. You know, I just photograph these different sport balls and, you know, I make this available to other photographers where I masked them out and did all these new techniques where you can put like a football up there and then you can bring these, the senior in or the quarterback in and use these smoke brushes to dissolve his face and have the smoke coming out, powder brushes to dissolve and conform to his body shape. And so he looks like he's being made out of powder. And it's funny because I was watching X-Men with my son and that little black lizard guy that came into the president White House office, you know, you saw this guy and all of a sudden, poof, and he just turned into powder and he disappeared. And then he reappeared on the ceiling of the White House. And I was in the theater with my son. I'm like, God, did you see that wire? he turned into powder. Wow. And so I'm like, you got my son's like, Dad, shut up. And he'd do it again, you know? And I'm like, wow, did you see that? So I went in the studio. I'm like, how did they do that? And so I came up with, I do this all the time whenever I see an image or something. I look at it, I'm like, how's that done? And then I start become very analytical with it and figure out ways to do that. And so this time I'm just telling the story. I bought 50 pounds of baking powder. And I had this big fan on, and I was like, Wyatt, take this big bowl here and throw it into this fan. And he did. And I didn't realize that, you know, I'm in my studio. And so we're throwing about a pound and a half of powder into this fan. And when it hits the air, he goes, poof. And I'm like, yes. And so I put up a boom light and I photographed it. Next thing I know, I got baking powder from one end of my studio to the other. 3 years, Bill, I still have baking powder in that daggone studio. And we just moved to Des Moines. So finally, we sold the house with the studio in it. And I was like, boy, I'll never do that again inside. I'll take it outside. But it's little techniques like that now that I can create something as short as 8 minutes. Or I can get very involved with it. The fighter images, you know, there's over 100 layers. And there's three types of illustration or montaging, I say. There's montaging where this is probably the hardest. Where you want to make an image look like it was actually shot and photographed where its location was. And those are the hardest because you got to apply by so many rules. All the lighting's got to be the same type of lighting, scale and everything else, and react, you know. That's another thing about digital is when we were photographers, the camera lens did everything for you. It did your perspective. It did your lighting. It did your range of your lenses, whether it be telephoto or wide angle. It gave you that depth of view. You know, all that was done for you. But now with digital, everything is now being photographed separately. And you got to know that and know how reflections are going to go and know how lighting's going to go and how to mix those together. And so today, mostly, you know, when I teach and do seniors, I'll do something within probably 8 to 15 minutes, maybe 30 minutes once we get into it. But I've adapted all these new techniques on how to create images like that, montaging. And now Photoshop has come so far and Topaz remasking and all that. That now making selections are much, much easier than what they were 10 years ago, 15 years ago. I mean, it was an SOB getting a concise, precise selection around somebody, especially hair, you know. Today's technology has shortened the gap between the amateur and the professional. And boy, if you're not on that cutting edge of being the professional, you're hurting. And a lot of studios today are hurting because of that. It's no longer can you just do a simple portrait and that be enough. Now you got to reach in deeper and you got to pull into yourself. You know, people come to me because they want my vision. They want how I respond to what's before me. They're not coming to me to just get a bunch of photographs. A, they're not going to pay my price to get a bunch of photographs. They're coming to me for one of a kind, you know, vision of whatever I'm photographing. And that's a really, I mean, I'm knock on wood, I'm so grateful that I'm in a position to be like that. And I've busted my butt for a long time to get to that vision. I mean, photography is a tough road. Any art is a tough road. And so you got to be persistent. So you always got to keep on learning and you always got to be creating. So at first, you know, I would have 2 or 3 days into it. Now at maximum, I probably have, unless I'm doing something outrageous, probably a day, maybe at maximum, and on the short side, probably about 15 minutes into an image. And it doesn't matter. Please don't get that wrong. You know, I created my Fallen Angel image, and that has over 6,500 images into it. I believe it's one of the most complicated images in the world. And that took me over 5 years to create. Now, it doesn't matter to me if I got 6,500 images or only one image in it. What matters is what the response is between the viewer and the piece that is before them. And so it doesn't matter how much work you have into it or how little. If you have a lot of work in it and it still looks like crap, then you have a crappy image. If you have a, you know, take the woman in the rocking chair with barn behind her. You know, that's just one image, but it tells so much to the story.
Woody, we are running shy on time. I've got two questions for you. I'll warn you, the last question is going to be about some of the schools you're teaching at and how people can keep in touch with you. But before then, what advice would you give to an up-and-coming photographer right now?
Learn your craft. Don't think you can just push a few buttons and have it be done. This is what it makes my heart cry because a lot of places that I teach at, everybody just wants to know how to push the button and have it done. And it doesn't work that way. It's knowing your craft, knowing your lighting, knowing your composition, knowing the effects of what color is going to have on people. That's something that I do with every interview I have before I shoot. You know, I ask the people what their favorite color is because they're going to respond to that color. And so many people today just think, you know, they can handhold a camera, they can use their iPhone, what have you. Again, that philosophy of good enough, you know, this is good enough. Well, no, it's not good enough. You have to know your craft. You have to know what you're feeling and what you're visualizing, and you have to have the knowledge to be able to get that onto, you know, either a digital file or a photographic print. I don't care. But it's know your craft. It horrifies me how little the new up-and-coming photographers really know their craft, and yet the ones that are making a name for themselves truly do know their craft. And you mentioned about, you know, staying in touch with me, and I'll be happy. I give out my personal phone number to everybody, and I don't care if you use my products or not. Please, if you have questions, feel free to call me. I'm very supportive on staying in contact. I love paying it forward. And so if I can help anybody with any of their photography, don't hesitate to call. I do that with all my classes, and I'll do it with your radio station too.
Well, since you've made the offer, what is your phone number?
My phone number is 319-427-0085. My email is woodywaltersdigitalphotocandy.com.
Well, the last question I warned you was, how do people get in touch with you? Well, I've just heard two of those. How about, where do we find you online?
You can find me at woody@woodywalters.com. You can find me on Facebook. I don't do Twitter for some reason. It's mostly because I don't do a lot of social media. I love posting my images. I don't like to get very personal on social media. But those two places, you can definitely get in touch with me. Again, if you do the woody@woodywalters.com, you can send me images if you would like my review on them. And again, leave your phone number, because I don't like having to type all that information out to tell you what I think. Leave me your phone number, and I'll be happy to call you back and go over that.
And your website is woodywalters.com, correct?
That's my photographic website. My email is woody@woodywalters.com.
Gotcha. And if I understand correctly, don't you also have a website aimed at photographers looking for training? Is that correct?
Yes. I do a free Photoshop tip every week, and that's really cool. It's woodywaltersdigitalphotocandy.com.
Very good. And last,
All one word.
Lastly, you mentioned some of the schools you're teaching at. What are some of those so our audience might be able to connect with you there?
Absolutely. Again, teaching the Texas School, the West Coast School in California, the Atlanta School or Georgia School in Georgia, the Florida School in Daytona. We're doing Alabama and Mississippi. Don't ask me my dates. My wife does all my scheduling for me. We're doing Canada, Ontario, and New Hampshire.
Is that all?
That's all I think for this year.
Well, hopefully when you come to the Georgia School, we'll be able to catch up. If I'm not there, at least for us to catch up. You'll be in, I believe, in Helen, Georgia, which is about an hour and a quarter from my home up here in North Georgia. So I'd love to catch up with you here. So
we would do that. I'm going to spend a couple of days for free, you know, not for free, but on my time at each of these locations so I can enjoy them a little bit. So let's do that, Bill. I'd look forward to that.
Yeah, absolutely. You're going to be in a beautiful, beautiful part of Georgia. So. Well, my friend, we are out of time, but thank you. Woody Walters, thank you for being here.
Bill, thank you. And thank you, audience, for watching all this. I hope we shared something.
Well, I concur. Thank you, kind listener, for being here. So if you've enjoyed the show, please share it right now with a friend. If you don't share with a friend right now, then everyone you know will assume that you do not consider them a friend. And then after that, I'll have to send you a chain letter with a curse attached to it. So please, right now, share this with a friend. And if you'd like to hear more from Intrepid Photography or Face the H on Intrepid Business, kindly sign up for email alerts below. Thus ends another episode. I am your host, Bill Ramsey. Thank you again, and we will see you next time on Intrepid Photography Radio.